This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
What's up, guys? It's your boy Dylan at Thunder Chats here, coming to you with another word from our presenting sponsor, BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA and NHL playoffs this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to the online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of their over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code BLEAV, that is BLEAV, capital letters BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. And welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Top of Thunder podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Hunzinger at Thunder Chats. We are part of the BLEAV Network, and this podcast is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. Now that all of that fun stuff is out of the way, I don't have any other of my unit members with me today, but I am not alone. We are diving into draft coverage once again. This is our third episode. We had the Tylers on separately in the past two episodes, but we're bringing on somebody out of the No Seamless Collective, but his draft knowledge is expansive and it is top notch. So without further ado, let's get into it. Joining us today is a man who played college basketball, or played basketball at the collegiate level for American University. I already messed up my whole intro. He is the host of the Piston Pulse podcast. He's a co-host of the Game Theory podcast with Sam Vecini, who is a player. He is a teacher. He is a coach. He is a podcast host. He's a scout. He's an analyst. He's a friend of the pod, and he is here to talk Thunder and NBA draft, making his glorious return to the pod. Please welcome Bryce Simon.
Man, that's probably the best one I've ever had. So I appreciate it, Dylan. I always pride myself on trying to make my guests feel very welcome and in doing those intros. And so I appreciate you returning the favor and all of that. It's far too kind, but I'm excited to be here, man. We had a lot of fun the last time. We were just talking NBA. We got into some draft stuff. And so, of course, with the season now, I'm excited to get straight NBA draft content on this one. Maybe a few other things to start off, but eventually all NBA draft.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, kind of like as a transition point into the draft, obviously, your Detroit Pistons have a very high pick in the draft right now. Who are you looking at right now for the Pistons?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. My hope is that somehow Zachary Risache falls to number five, but the more and more we see things, it just doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. Yeah. You know, he was number one in ESPN's new mock when we're recording this. I see him number two to the Wizards a lot. I just don't know that he's going to get there. So it really comes down to a few guys in terms of, I think Dalton connects in play. I think Reed Shepherd, if he fell, would be in play. Matas Buzelis. I think Bleacher Report just came out with Cody Williams, you know, and then if they want to go with a big, you know, depending on how Trajan Langdon and the new front office feels about Jalen Duren, Donovan Clingan, if he's there. So I think there's a multitude of options, and a little bit's going to depend on how things fall in front of them.
Yeah. Y'all've got like house money. I mean, you know, you've got a lot of options. This is obviously like a draft where I don't feel like, you know, you guys are in a position that, like, you know, your GM's going to be fired. Obviously, you know, the news came out today, Troy Weaver is parting ways with the program, or I guess the program's parting ways with Troy Weaver, however you want to say that.
Yeah.
So I don't think the GM's going to have any stress, but, like, this is the type of draft where, you know, if you reach and it doesn't work out, it doesn't really matter because, you know, there's a lot of parity in the draft class. So I think y'all are in good shape. If y'all take Reed, I would like that better than him going to the San Antonio or Houston. I tweeted out earlier today, if he goes to Houston, I'll be sad. If he goes to San Antonio, that's just nightmare fuel for me being a Thunder fan. So, yeah, that's cool, man. I like it. I hope you guys can get somebody, you know, that can help you guys out, because what is it like? Is it four straight years now being in top five or three?
Yeah. Yeah. So they what Killian was number seven. So they weren't top five that year. That was the first year I came in coming out of COVID. Then they had Cade at one, Jaden at five, Asar at five. Jaden at five, Asar at five, and then number five again this year. So back to back years, they had the worst record in the NBA and went from one to five. I think the Jaden Ivey year, they went from two to five or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's just – listen, there's going to be a good player there. Trajan Langdon has to find the right guy to select. I also think, for me, it's like, okay, who does he pick? Because if he picks, let's say, a big guy like Donovan Clingan, I think that tells you what Langdon feels about Jalen Duren. Or if he selects a Reed Shepherd, maybe that tells you something about how he feels about Jaden Ivey, because there are going to be wings on the board. So maybe it gets us a little bit of insight into how Langdon feels about some of the other young players on the roster as well.
Yep. Yeah, like I said, y'all are in a good position, and just like you guys, I think the Thunder are in a good position as well. You know, obviously we're not blessed to have, you know, a high pick in this year's draft, but at 12, and like I said, kind of the parity in this draft class, I feel like we can get a solid player at 12. You know, I've kind of talked about it, you know, the parity in the draft class. I'm asking every guest that we have on this question, but, you know, this class is regarded as a bad draft class.
Sure.
Bryce, do you believe this class is a bad draft class?
Only at the top, in terms of if you want like the star power. And really, we're talking about star prospects, right? I mean, we know somebody's going to end up being a really good player out of this class. But when you're just talking about who you've evaluated as prospects, this is what I always said about Victor Wembanyama. He was a generational prospect. Does he was going to be a generational player? No, it doesn't mean that, but he was a generational prospect. There is no Victor Wembanyamas. There's no Scoot Hendersons. I realize people may have forgot already because he didn't have a great rookie year. That was a big time prospect. And then Brandon Miller as well. And even the Thompson twins, you know, Amin especially. So you just don't have those guys in the class. I heard somebody describe it as a very flat draft at the top, and you've kind of alluded to this already. I think that's a good way of saying it. You know, my first tier of guys, really, Dylan, are like, it can go to eight or nine dudes. Now, I don't think all of those guys are in play at one, and I don't think all those guys at the top, like I don't think Sar falls past number two, but just in terms of how I've evaluated them and see them as players. And then my next tier of guys, which is the guys we'll probably really talk about with the Thunder, goes from 10 to 18. So you're talking about another nine players there. So I think it's very flat, but I think there's some real talent, especially if role players, certain fits, floor spacers, defenders, those type of things.
Yeah, it feels like it's a great draft class for somebody that does their homework, like, you know, yeah, like really gets in the weeds and, like, does a good job on the scouting work, which, you know, leg up for the Thunder, awesome. But also it feels like a good draft class for, you know, teams that are looking to compete now, looking to add a player that they could plug into, not necessarily their starting lineup, but at least like the rotation, you know, that has like a translatable skill of the NBA. That, you know, and there's a lot of upperclassmen kind of in the lottery in this class too. So that speaks also to the kind of win now ready type system. But yeah, I mean, let's dive into the Thunder, man. You know, obviously, you know, like I said, we have pick 12 in this draft. Everybody's got their opinions about, you know, who could be or who should be the pick at 12. But based on what you've seen from the Thunder in recent years, what you've seen from the Thunder this year and in the postseason, what do you think? Give me a couple players you think you would like the Thunder to take at 12.
So I'll be completely honest. One player that opted on Game Theory, we mocked to number 12 to the Thunder. And then we try to change it up. And we've had some interesting ones where – we've had to hash out, like, Rob Dillingham still on the board here. You know, do the Thunder have any interest in Rob Dillingham? But Kyle Filipowski is one that Sam and I are very high on, especially compared to the media consensus. I think lots of mock drafts, you'll see Filipowski closer to the end of the teens or even the early 20s. For me, Kyle Filipowski is a dribble pass shoot big that is going to be at least neutral defensively, that he moves better than what he gets credit for. And whenever I think dribble pass shoot and teams in the NBA, the Oklahoma City Thunder are the first team I think of. Now, You would probably know this better than me, and I've brought this up, is how did the Thunder feel about Jalen Williams, the other Jalen Williams, the big Jalen, Jay Will? How do they feel about Kenrich Williams? How do they feel about their big guy scenario and situation? I don't know the answer to that. I think Filipowski would be a really nice fit to that roster coming off the bench. Probably play him and Chet together at times if you wanted to go big. I feel like the Thunder did that a little bit more, right, Dylan? Like a little bit more Chet and Jay Will at times. And
a little bit, yeah.
A little bit. Now, I don't think it's something they want to do a lot, but I think Filipowski makes a lot of sense, unless you just tell me, listen, Chet, Jay Will, Kenrich, they're going to hold it down. They don't need another big.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Sam Presti actually alluded to it in his exit interview that I think – Chet and Jalen Williams play together like 2.5% of the time or something like that. So very small sample size, but based on everything that we've seen and based on, you know, the actions of the coaching staff in the front office, there is a belief in, you know, big Jalen Williams. I call him Boom around here. So, there's a big belief in him, you know, based on his skill set, because it feels like he could do a lot of what Filipowski does in terms of, you know, the shooting and the passing. And, you know, he's not a great defender, but he's not a bad defender at the same time. And also, you know, he can kind of throw his body around and get some boards as well. So that's kind of one of my drawbacks on Filipowski. Like, I get the idea of that player, but also I want to ask you about this, because I you know, you even said, like, you know, he's a dribble pass shoot big man, and I should have his numbers in front of me as I'm pulling this up. This is phenomenal podcasting. But let's see here. So this season he shot 34% from three on three attempts a game. Do you think that's the type of volume that we're looking at, you know, in the year? Like, is that like the trajectory we're looking at? Or do you think that he has not like Lauri Markkanen volume, but like, you know, somewhere in the middle as like a big?
I will admit, and I will freely admit this, that Filipowski is a little bit more theoretical than practical when you look at the box score numbers. Honestly, the more concerning stat, like if somebody wanted to tell me, like, are you sure he can shoot, is actually the free throw percentage, Dylan. Yeah. So this season he shot just 67% from the free throw line. And as we know, a lot of NBA people will use that as an indicator for college players. Now, he did shoot 77% as a freshman. So a little bit of a, you know, I don't know what to think about that. Here's what I buy into. I do think the mechanics look good. I think it looks fluid. I think he's going to be confident with it. And then I do think he can pass. He can put it on the deck a little bit. So I am buying the skill set a little bit more than maybe others. And I wouldn't blame somebody if they were like, oh, I'm not positive that he's this dribble pass shoot guy that Bryce is selling him as. I get it. I understand it. I just tend, you know, there's guys you buy in and there's guys that you don't. And he's one that I kind of just at a certain point in the season said, I think I buy the skill set and the skill level. And so that's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah. And then, you know, and to be fair, you know, playing with creators like, you know, Shea and Jalen Williams on like a driving kick offense, like it will get you better looks. And, you know, maybe that percentage goes up a little bit. So I feel that. I understand. I do want to ask about like his, I know, you know, again, like it's not just you, like it's other people talking about his passing. And, you know, if you watch, you know, he does make high level reads, but his turnover percentage is, you know, last year it was like, you know, leaning turnovers, like it was 1.6 assists to 2.5 turnovers, cleaned it up a little bit at 2.8 assists, but still at 2.1 turnovers. Is that from like risky passing, or is that more of just like, you know, they're sending two at the ball when he's in the post or something like that?
Yeah. Like I was reading through my notes as you were talking about that. And I was like, man, I bet this is something we need to address with the assist to turnover ratio. And now I have lost. Oh yeah. It doesn't, you know, obviously that's not something that pops off, but if you watch the games, I thought you could just see the good skill level, like in his ability to make those reads and make those decisions. So it was still positive this year, right? Like he was still, you know, you read it off. So it's not like he had a negative this past season like he did in his freshman year. And I think that shows growth in terms of that. And then I do think he can pass out of the short roll. So I don't know if he's like a great pick and roll teammate, but I think he can pick and pop and then attack closeouts from big. And then I think he can also short roll and make those decisions. I just don't, you know, he's not going to be a lob threat or something like that. If that's what Thunder fans or Presti or, you know, Dagnall are looking for, that's not what if you're not drafting Kyle Filipowski to do those things, if you want to, you know, a pick and roll threat at the rim, you might as well draft Eves Misi or somebody like that.
No, I got you. Yeah, like I said, I kind of understand the fit. He hasn't been my favorite player in the process, but, you know, as I've said, like, I've just recently got into the process. So, like, I don't have a board or anything like that. You know, I'm just kind of I'm compiling, you know, different opinions and then, you know, at the same time kind of intaking, like, you know, different film things that I see on Twitter and stuff like that. So that's kind of my film. Like, if we took Flip, I'd be cool with it. First of all, his name's Flip.
Sam always calls him Flip. And I will say I do have him lower than 12 on my board. So I know earlier I said that, like, hey, I have, you know, Sam especially, and then I'm higher than a lot. Like, I don't have him in the 20s. I have him at 16 on my board right now, but it's in that tier of 10 to 18 of nine guys that I have in this tier two. But he, you know, I wouldn't consider it a reach, but he is like a 16. There's some other guys we'll talk about that are going to be higher ranked on my board, just individual rankings.
Okay. Yeah, I feel you. That's fair. And would you say like that 10 to 18 range is kind of like interchangeable from like top to bottom?
Oh yeah, 100%. I'm very much a tier guy, Dylan, in terms of, I would just have this conversation with somebody today where I would rather not even give players like a number, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like I would much rather just, these nine guys are in my tier one. Draft how you see fit based on your team, what your team needs, how they fit with your team, what you prioritize as a team. And then, okay, the next nine guys or 10 guys or 11, doesn't have to be a specific number. They're the next tier. And so that tier one for me has nine guys. The next tier has nine guys. You can break tiers at times, but in general, I try not to break tiers. But if it's quote unquote the last guy in that tier, if he was taken as the first guy in that tier, I wouldn't have any qualms with that whatsoever.
Okay. That's 100% fair. You know, kind of sticking in the 12 range, you know, I asked you to come up with a couple guys. Obviously you brought up Flip, you made some good points, and, you know, you've made me question some things in my head. So I want to ask, do you have anybody else that you would like to see the Thunder possibly grab at 12?
I mean, I always think about Tinjon Saloon whenever the Thunder come up. So this is a young kid out of France, you know, still playing, 18 years old, doesn't turn 19 until August. He is your prototypical 3-and-D forward, possesses all the qualities that go into that label if he can really shoot it. Now, this is one, if you go look at the three-point percentage, I'll get the updated numbers here in my notes. They're not, you know, he is down just above 30% on 4.4 attempts, but he's 75% from the free throw line. And again, he's an 18-year-old playing in a professional league right now. So I always do give a little bit of that, you know, whenever you're evaluating these guys. I should say his season just ended, you know, but 54 game sample size. This dude plays hard as heck, gets out and runs in transition. I think he has a chance to be really impactful defensively. What I like about Saloon is, like, he's a real, like, four man. Like, he really fits into that role. You know, he's not a big, he's not a center. Wouldn't really call him a wing. Like, he's a forward. And I just wonder if there could be a role for him down the road with the Thunder. I don't think Saloon's a guy that's coming in and playing for you right away as a 18-year-old or just turning 19-year-old rookie, but he's really intriguing. And, you know, we've seen the Thunder take chance on a guy like, you know, Pokuševski. We've seen him take a chance on Usman Jang. Maybe they don't want to continue to do those things, but, you know, this is the kind of guy in that mold.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and say, like, you know, hand up, like, I'm very much in the camp, like, I'm done with Project for a while.
Sure.
Like, at this point, I'd like Usman Jane, you know, just to, like, go out there and get a little bit of run, like, see what he could do, because I do feel like he's improved, like, he's followed a pretty steady trajectory of improvement, and I think this offseason is going to be huge for him, you know, playing on the Olympic team in France. You know, maybe he's not getting a lot of run like in those games, but, you know, just being on that experience, like on that team, that experience, being around those guys, playing against Victor Wembanyama, Rudy Gobert, guys like that, like that's going to do good for him. So I think this could be a really big offseason for him. But yeah, Saloon's obviously a guy that, you know, a lot of people like, you know, for the Thunder because, you know, like you said, the project. I've seen a lot of people try to compare Saloon and Usman Jang, and I feel like they just see like this young French man. And they think that they're the same player. Can you confirm or deny those accusations?
What has Jang been with the Thunder? Because I'll be honest, like, this was my first year really getting into this. So, like, Usman wasn't a guy I, like, really dove into scout and stuff like that when in that draft class. So what's the archetype and the role that Usman Jang has kind of tried to fill in his NBA career so far?
They've kind of parked him in the corners a lot. Okay. Maybe not even in the corners, just, you know, like around the three-point line. He does do a little bit of cutting, and, you know, they're able to find him, you know, going to the rim. One of the big, I guess, quarrels with Thunder fans on Usman Jang is he's not super physical. You know, I mean, he's 6'10", and, you know, if he's by the rim, he's trying to do, like, a layup, double-clutch layup or whatever, like, trying to avoid contact. And it's like, dude, just dunk it. yeah, I mean, I am the founder of the Jang Gang, so I'm never going to say anything bad about Usman Jang. But, yeah, I mean, that's kind of his role offensively. They don't ask him to do a lot. I know that he has some creation ability, but, you know, with all the creators we have on the team, he doesn't get a lot of opportunity for that. So, yeah, we've kind of put him in that kind of like a 3-and-D role, honestly, at the 6'10".
Okay, so what I would say by the things that pop out to me there is, like, Saloon is not going to be a guy that you project to play with the ball in his hands or do much creation with the ball in his hands. He's truly going to be in the corner, really instinctual cutter, offensive rebounder. Of all the guys I've evaluated, he's one that in transition stands out with how impactful he is. And he is, like, physically built very well as an 18-year-old. And I do think he'll be physical. Now, I think anybody that you talk to about Saloon is going to point to a very scary stat, and that's how poorly he has finished around the rim this season. And it's not good. You know, at one point I know here late in the year was like 40% around the rim on non-dunks. And so there's some real concerns about the offense. And even defensively at times, there's concerns of, like, does he always understand what's going on? But this dude plays extremely, extremely, extremely hard. He's aggressive on the defensive boards, has an intensity about him. So, like, there's some real rawness, but there's some real upside to what he does. But it's not going to be – it's not like this, like, super skilled offensive player. I don't think anybody's projecting him to be that archetype.
I got you. And I've heard he's got really high motor as well.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. It sounds like there's just the polar opposite players. It's really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's a guy that, like, you know, like I said, like if we got him, like, I could see why, like, you know, the tools are there. And I think, you know, it gives you a different look of a project. So I wouldn't be mad about it. But as I said, I'm just kind of done with projects. I want to bring in somebody that can theoretically help. And we actually have a question here from D Stevens talking about Tristan Da Silva as a two-way player might be perfect for the Thunder. Presti talks about more offense being needed. Da Silva is more versatile in offense than Saloon. It feels like, you know, and he's an upperclassman, so
yeah,
it feels like he might be more of like a plug-and-play guy. What can you tell us about Da Silva? How do you feel about him?
I agree with that. I think there's definitely more offensive versatility, and like, this is a little bit more of your dribbles, pass, shoot type of player with Da Silva. This is why he has risen up draft boards, especially late in the year. You know, his teammate Cody Williams came in with all the hype. Probably a guy we need to talk about at a certain point as well. Because for me personally, Cody Williams may be there whenever the Thunder on the, you know, on the clock at 12. Other people have him going much higher, but that's the range I have him in. Da Silva is in this tier for me. He is the last guy in this tier, but he's very much in this tier for me. And if he ends up in the late lottery, I wouldn't be surprised. My one thing with Da Silva for the Thunder specifically is he isn't that physical player. There's I would never call a player soft because, like, you don't get to the level these dudes are. But, like, he's not as physical. He's not a great defensive rebounder. Some of the things that I assume the Thunder would want to prioritize this summer after what we saw in the playoffs, which, again, what a great run from them. SGA balled out. Like, insane, successful season for the Oklahoma City Thunder. But if you want to continue to grow that, I think they should look for defensive rebounding, physicality, those type of things. I think the Silva is everything they would want on the offensive end. I'm not sure defense, and the Silva's a really good team defender. I think he's going to be below average on the ball, kind of point of attack, and then above average off the ball. But it's really the rebounding and kind of the physicality that I guess he doesn't play with that would be where I would question the fit a little bit. But I mean, I understand that, you know, like from the whoever asked the question or made the comment, I think that's a great name to bring up.
Yeah, yeah. The Silva's been a guy that I've kind of gravitated to recently. But as I said, you know, this is ever changing. It is weird because he's like 6'10" and he's a forward and he's averaging like 3-4 rebounds a game. And then you look at Devin Carter, who's a guard, and he's averaging like 9 rebounds a game. But, you know, as I've seen the conversation on Twitter, like it's been exacerbated at this point, but I don't think that's the word. It's been exhausted at this point. That the Thunder fans don't want to draft another guard. But Devin Carter was mocked by ESPN to the Thunder today. How would you feel about Devin Carter to the Thunder?
So this guard question is really interesting to me. Explain to me why there would be such strong pushback on drafting a guard.
I think so. First of all, the conversation was the same last year with a lot of Thunder fans. They didn't want a guard last year. So whenever Kayson Wallace was drafted, a lot of people were shaking their fists. And even throughout the season, as he found success, they were still kind of mad about it because, you know, we were struggling and rebounding. And then, you know, when the postseason happened, he made some rookie mistakes in the last game. The rebounding disparity, the physicality disparity, everybody's like, oh, we have to get a big man. We have to get somebody. I've seen people say, if they're not 6'9 and above, I don't want them. Like, I like they're just up in arms about getting a big guy. So, obviously, Devin Carter, 6'3", but, you know, he's got a really long wingspan, really physical player. So, not what they're looking for, but could still add something. But I'm of the mindset that – especially like after watching that playoff game, I agree. Like, you know, rebounding is a disparity, but as Sam Presti has addressed, as Mark Daigneault had addressed, that's a choice. That is by design. We are electing to take a little bit off on rebounding to have more versatility on defense and offense and then transition. Like, that is 100% a choice by design. But what I saw in the playoffs is our offense stagnated when Shea wasn't on the floor, and Jalen Williams, you know, whether it was because he couldn't get space because we didn't have a good screen setter, whether it was because he couldn't get to the rim, you know, as he was in the regular season, our offense stagnated without SGA. So I feel like getting another guard, a guy that can create some offense for you, whether it's for yourself or whether it's for himself or his teammates, get open looks at the 3-point line, I feel like that could be beneficial. That's just me though.
No, I'm with you. There's lots of times the Thunder come up. Devin Carter's on the board. Jeff McCain's on the board. And these are guys that I really like. Devin Carter is a guy I've kind of fallen in love with and, you know, strongly have him in lottery conversation at this point. And my argument when I have considered taking those guys is, okay, what's going to happen with Josh Giddey this summer? If Josh Giddey gets moved, now there's a hole in the starting lineup. Do you find somebody else? Does Isaiah Joe move into the starting lineup? Does Kaysen move into the starting lineup? If not, then maybe they're filling that rebounding stuff with a, you know, an outside trade or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, are they going to be able to pay Isaiah Joe whenever you know that J-Dub and Chet, you know, are going to get paid here down the road? And I don't think that continuing to add that depth with really good players is a bad thing. And if you're going to play quote unquote small, like the Thunder do, having good rebounders at those positions is a way to make up for it. So Devin Carter isn't like your prototypical answer to this, you know, defensive rebounding, you know, issue, but you have smaller guy like him that goes in and gets impactful on the boards. I just think he's really good. And if he's there at 12, I think they have to at least consider it. And if they don't feel like Filipowski's the answer. Tristan's the answer. Daron Holmes, who's another player I have in this tier, is the answer. They don't want to wait on Tinjon Saloon to figure it out. Then why not draft another really good player and then find a different? They can trade for anybody they want. That's why they have 30,000 draft picks, Dylan, is they can roughly. I mean, give or take. they can go figure out this problem and find the solution. It doesn't have to be with number 12. They can do it in some other capacity. By the way, how wrong was I about them trading for Gordon Hayward and that being an impactful move? Goodness gracious. That was, brother, I was stupid.
Let's get down on the tangent, man. Like, it wasn't just you for one, like, and it wasn't stupid. Like, the process of it, the mindset of it, it made sense. If we got the player that we saw earlier that season in Charlotte, it would have worked out fine.
How weird has this thing turned with, like, him being all upset and acting like he didn't? What did he think his role was going to be? Like, he thought he was going to come in and start on that team? Is that the confusion here? Like, I don't want to turn this into Gordon Hayward hate, but I'm like, what is going on? Like, I assumed he would have understood. Hey, I'm coming here to be like the seventh man, veteran, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it seems like he didn't. There was a miscommunication or a misunderstanding. Am I understanding the storyline correctly?
I think that's what he's saying. That's definitely what his wife is saying on Instagram.
Also saw that she got involved with some comments.
So.
Yeah.
So that's always fun. Like, hey, shout out wifey, you know, hold it down for your man. I get it. It's cool.
Shout out.
But like, yeah, like, even if you were confused about your role, like, I'll never understand the mindset of, like, you're getting paid like $30 million. You're going to be a free agent this offseason, up for a new contract. Like, I don't feel like it's beneficial for you to sulk because you're not getting the ball as much as you want. And on top of that, when you get the ball, you don't shoot it when you're open. You don't even look at the rim. Like, I don't see how that was beneficial for him at all. I don't see how it helped him at all. At this point, like, he'll probably get a vet minimum contract or something like that. I'd be shocked if he, like, gets, like, any kind of, like, multi-year contract in the league just because of how he handled that.
That was his role for the rest of his NBA career. So that was his chance to prove whether to the Thunder or other teams, hey, I'm willing to accept this. Give me the MLE, or, you know, I don't think he ever would have got that, but, you know, give me 8 million or 6 million or something like that. You know, I will flourish in this role. And he just didn't. I mean, everything else played out the way we had talked about, right? Like, you came on here, you made me make a bold claim. And I think my bold claim or prediction was that Josh Giddey would get a DNP. Like, we never got to that point, but we did see him get removed from the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. My thought was Gordon Hayward was going to take up that, you know, those minutes, and he just wasn't able to, which, shout out my guy Isaiah Joe for being able to step in there and do his thing. Yep. But sorry, I know we got off on one there, but I was like,
no, that's all good.
This is weird. I usually don't see exit interview stuff for other organizations, but obviously that one kind of flooded. I also realized I follow a lot of Thunder people, and so I'm always pretty up to date on Oklahoma City Thunder stuff.
Hey, we'll accept you. We'll be your West team.
Hey, you're almost the closest NBA team to where I actually live. So there's definitely much love coming from me.
There we go. I like it. So Bryce, you kind of touched on this player, but I want to talk about, like, that archetype of player.
Okay.
But I'm going to talk about it after we're from our sponsors.
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And we're back. All right, Bryce, first of all, guys, we are here with Bryce Simon of the Piston Pulse podcast, Motor City Hoops, and Game Theory podcast with Sam Vecini. Bryce, before we went on a Gordon Hayward tangent, you mentioned very briefly Daron Holmes. He's also a player I really like, but there's a lot of players in that archetype in this draft. You got Daron Holmes, you got Quell Ware, you got guys like Jonathan Mogba, who is like rising up draft boards, like kind of players in that archetype. Just kind of talk about like what you like, which and what questions you have for them.
I think one thing I've really fallen in love with is bigs that can space the floor a little bit, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, Chet is the ultimate example of if this is a cheat code. Chet is a cheat code. I get so jealous whenever I watch the Thunder, right? SGA is amazing. J-Dub's awesome. Isaiah Joe is one of my favorite players in the league. But when you have a dude that can space the floor like Chet, along with some of the other skills he has offensively, and then protect the rim on the other end, that's just, it's ridiculous. So listen, I'm not going to act like Daron Holmes is Chet Holmgren, but Daron Holmes is a very, very, very skilled big man. And I think that's one thing a lot of people didn't realize till they really got into the tape. This dude dominated, and I realize it's the A-10, but he absolutely dominated. And defense is loaded up against him. He can pass the ball. I think he led the country in dunks 2 years ago. Then he comes back this year and shoots, you know, upper 30% from the three-point line. He is a good defender that nobody in that league tested at the rim. He got better with his activity throughout the season. He got better with his rebounding throughout the season. He was a better defensive rebounder this year than in the previous season. His offensive rebounding numbers only went down because he was playing more on the perimeter on offense. But he's a guy that there's just a lot of versatility. You want him to pick and roll, he can catch lobs. You want him to pick and short roll, he can make the pass. You want him to pick and pop, he can knock down the shot. They want to close out, he can attack the closeout. Now, this all sounds great. Why isn't he a top five pick? Well, he's not 7 foot. He's closer to 6'10 with a good wingspan. Mm-hmm. He is athletic. He's got to add a little bit to his frame. But you asked the wrong guy about Daron Holmes. I love Daron Holmes. He's one of my guys in this draft. Yeah. And I've watched probably more Daron Holmes film than any player in the class. And that's another thing, a caveat I like to give, Dylan. I do have certain guys that I've watched way more film than other guys because of stuff, just reasons. And so sometimes that does like cause some biases and some disruption on my board and stuff like that. Daron's definitely one of those guys that, I mean, I've watched darn near every second of his games. And that was, Jordan Hawkins was that guy for me a year ago. I mean, I had watched almost every second of the second half of Jordan Hawkins' year at Connecticut. And so it just, I fell in love with his game. And so I watched him every time he played.
No, I feel that. Yeah. Daron Holmes is the guy that I've liked, you know, this draft cycle. And I also liked him last year. It was like a second round kind of flyer. And I know a lot of Thunder fans liked him. And it's funny because, you know, like just off top of mind, like two big guys that were kind of looking to be about the same range of the second round last year, both came back to college and one was like a success story in Daron Holmes. And then one's kind of like a cautionary tale of returning to college in Adem Bona. Sure. And, you know, there's extenuating circumstances to, you know, Bona's struggles, you know, in his return to college, but it is kind of weird, like seeing that dichotomy, but obviously Bona is eligible in this draft as well. How do you feel about him?
Yeah. So Bona's a guy I have as I would call it my strong second round tier. So my first tier I talked about are, you know, potential top five picks, whatever the tier one, the next one is like lottery mid first round. The one after that, end of the first, top of the second, guys, that goes from 19 to 35. And then here in my strong second round is Adem Bona. Like, he is undersized, but man, you talk about energetic and twitchy. That's insane. So for a team that likes that archetype of big, who's not crazy skilled, not going to space the floor, maybe not the same type of passer and those type of things, but is going to rebound, run the floor, those type of things. Like, he makes a lot of sense. Finish. So, you know, I put in here, if he's able to surround with some skill, whether it's a jump shot, passing, DHO, something like that, it would really, really raise the floor for his game. And then defensively, just offers versatility, some disruption. And what I found, though, is those guys that just have versatility, what is their role? Like, if you're a team that just truly drop coverage, is a Dembona a guy that you want to bring in? You know, he fits in the system that's a little bit more, hey, we'll switch, we'll hard hedge, we'll blitz this, and then his athleticism comes into play more.
Okay, that is all fair. I want to kind of circle back because I kind of mentioned this guy, and I also butchered his last name, but Jonathan Mogbo is a guy who has been rising up draft boards. What can you tell us about Mogbo?
Yeah, let me pull Mogbo. So Mogbo's right there in the second round as well. And okay. So I have him as a active forward slash big, play finishes and rebounds. So I don't think this is a great comp, but Kevon Looney type of archetype of player. I don't like comps. I like archetypes or roles is what I like to talk about. So that's, you know, Looney's a little bit undersized, but a pretty good passer, rebounders, play finishes, and some of those things. So Mogbo's going to, you know, catch lobs, big-time offensive rebounder, short floater looked intriguing. The handle's kind of loose, but the passing is real. And he makes quick decisions, hitting back doors, driving kicks, those type of things. You know, but he is 6'8", so that's what's interesting. He's got to be really active with his hands, plays aggressive that way. I think he plays really hard on the defensive end, but it's a little bit sporadic. So it's like, can you rein that in and kind of direct that energy into something that's a little bit more of a team construct? But Mogbo is definitely a very interesting prospect. I have him a little bit more of a second round guy, not really flirting with the first round for me.
I got you. Yeah, this was what I was going to ask you about. He mentions he loves Mogbo's passing. That's a selling point that I've seen a lot of Thunder fans, but also like anybody that likes Mogbo, as kind of used whenever they're talking about Mogbo.
I mean, the thing is, he averaged almost 4 assists and didn't turn it over doing that, and then 10 rebounds, over 10 rebounds. Now, 3 of those were on the offensive end, but still almost 7 defensive rebounds a game. So Mogbo is really, really interesting. Again, like I could see, you know, people having him snuck into the first round, but not where you guys are picking. Now, the thing is, again, we talk about picks. You know, he's there at 40. You tell me the Thunder can't buy back into 40 and draft him there? Absolutely. And maybe he's the guy that does make sense for a big to add to that front line. So I think that's where Thunder fans should be looking at Mogbo is, hey, Presti really pinpoints this guy and goes and finds a way to get him in the second round.
Yeah, and you know, as you said, like, we've got all the ammunition to trade back into either the second round or even late first round. And I wouldn't be shocked because we're going to have some roster spots available. Obviously we got a lot of salary cap available this year. So I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, Presti tries to trade back into late first. You know, we kind of talked about some bigs and obviously, you know, that's the hot button topic. That's what everybody wants. That's what all the Thunder fans want. But I want to kind of circle back to what we was talking about a few minutes ago about guards and how we feel like guards could be beneficial to the Thunder if they provide, you know, a certain skill that, you know, they don't necessarily have on the team. And, you know, I have it in my tag here. We've talked about it in the past. Obviously, Reed Sheppard is a guy that I loved watching in college basketball, but it's not only that. It's not because he played for Kentucky. I truly believe, like, at the top of the draft, Reed Sheppard is the most Thunder player in terms of skill set, in terms of character, in terms of attitude, and in terms of like mindset and like processing that they have. Like, I like, spoiler, like, you know, I'm asking everybody to kind of give like a bold take, like, going into the draft right now. Mine is the Thunder find a way to trade up for Reed Sheppard, because I feel like if you have him and Case Wallace on the bench, first of all, shout out Kentucky, but if you have him and Case Wallace on the bench, like, they're nice they really complement each other, because Kaysen is a guy that obviously he's like more of an off-ball player when it comes to shooting the basketball. He's going to work on a little bit on ball this summer, but definitely an off-ball guy. Defensively, he's like a guy that's just going to man you up. He's a guy that can, you know, like make life difficult for you. Reed is the guy who can do some stuff like creation with the ball in his hands. Obviously, he can spot up, he can be off ball, but he's a guy that is just a menace in the passing lanes. And as you mentioned in the last pod, and when we was on the drop step together, Reed Sheppard is one of the best jump shot contesters that you've evaluated. So how would you feel about if the Thunder were to trade up and try to get Reed Sheppard?
I mean, I think the offense speaks for itself, right? Like this dude shot, you know, I say it every time I talk about Reed Sheppard. 50% from three, Dylan. 50% for an entire college basketball season. It's okay. It's not bad. I suppose I'll buy the jumper for Reed Sheppard. I think he can pass the ball. I will admit, I'm a little bit lower than most on him being a primary initiator, like being a quote-unquote point guard, especially in a starting unit. Now, in a second unit, I can get behind that 100%. So we don't have to spend a lot of time in the offense. As you were talking about that, what that backcourt combo defensively kind of reminds me of what Shea and Dort do in the starting lineup defensively, where Dort is just like this physical point of attack, just gets after dudes, and SGA then gets to play passing lanes, weak sides, jump those passing lanes, get steals, deflections, come in from behind for a block. Maybe that's what Kaysen and Reed could do in a second unit. Again, just talking defensively, because you know, Reed isn't what SGA is on the offensive end, but defensively, Kaysen, physical point of attack defender. And then, as you mentioned, Reed can get in passing lanes, has great recovery. He showed off his athleticism with his testing at the combine, if we didn't already know, contest shots. Yeah, right. All of those type of things. So I kind of like the idea of that. And I think then because of that, Reed could play with Dort in the starting unit. You could obviously playing off of SGA and let him space the floor offensively. Mm-hmm. So my biggest concern with Reed on the defensive end is he is small, and I wonder how he holds up at the point of attack. But if you can play him as more of an off the ball defender, then I think his values really, really upticks.
Yeah, you can find a way to hide him like in like the corners, kind of like they do Shea too. But
100%. I mean,
yeah, but you know, he's really good at, you know, like we was talking about, he's really good at contesting jumpers. And you know, as much as I love Shea on the defensive end, and you know, as good as he's been for us, you know, in that off ball role, a lot of those corner threes was because Shea was helping inside, you know, trying to, you know, create a turnover, and he wasn't able to close out and, you know, get a good contest. So I think Reed would be great in that role as well. And also, you know, you kind of mentioned it, Isaiah Joe's due for a bag. Like, he was one of the best shooters in the league. he can do it off the catch. He could do it off movement. Like, he's going to get a bag, whether it's with the Thunder or another team. And if it's another team, you have Reed Sheppard there, you know, ready and waiting, a guy that can do a lot of what Isaiah Joe does in terms of, like, you know, getting shots off movement, off the catch, but also can create a little bit for himself as well. And, you know, can do, you know, what we're talking about defensively. And just like, I love Isaiah Joe. I think he's been a huge success story. He's been a great development story for this Thunder franchise, but he doesn't have the processing of Reed Sheppard as well as a passer and a playmaker too. So I feel like, you know, like I said, Thunder fans are like enamored with the idea of just getting somebody 6'9" and above. Somebody can go get rebounds. Somebody can go play defense. Somebody can, you know, do this, that, and another. But I think that there's value in not only getting a guy like Reed Sheppard, like even Jared McCain. Like, as I said, I'm a UK fan. I don't care if they play for Kentucky. If they can ball, I want the Thunder to get him. Jared McCain's a hooper. Like, he can shoot the crap out of the basketball. So, like, I am okay with the idea of getting a guard.
And as you were talking about that, it made me think of some film sessions me and Sam did during the playoffs in terms of how much the Thunder were helping from the weak side, taking away things like the Luka and you know, Gafford or Lively pick and roll. Well, Reed's ability to recover may be more valuable to the Thunder than some other teams that play a different type of scheme because Reed could be there on the weak side and then having to X out or recover to the wing, corner, whatever it is. And so his ability to do that may be even more important to a Thunder defensive scheme to ask their guys to do that.
Yep. I love it. I love it. All right. I've self-served enough. I don't think I need to talk any more Reed, but Bryce, I'm going to get to the, go ahead. Like, I mean, we already talked about a bunch of guys, but I'm going to skip ahead. Okay. Let's say, as we talked about, the Thunder kind of trade back in to this draft at some point. Okay. It could be at the top. It could be late first. It could be second. But, you know, we keep 12 and we get another pick. What is an ideal player combination for you for the Thunder to acquire if they were to get two picks in this draft?
Ooh, that's a good question. All right. So let's say Filipowski or Daron Holmes, one of those two guys at 12, right? Yep. So then if I'm trading back into the first, I think I would like for them to get a wing. So you tell me, which of these wings do you think is the most thundery between a Jacoby Walter, Keyshawn George, Baylor Shireman, Johnny Furphy, Justin Edwards, someone you're familiar with? Any of those guys stick out to you as wings that you – I bring up those guys. Those are my end of the first, top of the second wing group in that tier.
Yeah, I think Shireman provides obviously the shooting, you know, a little bit more size, physicality, can rebound a little bit.
Rebounds the heck out of the ball. That's a name right there. And I will tell you,
upperclassman.
And I think he's going to be a first round pick. The more and more I talk to people, I think he's played himself into the first round, but maybe Oklahoma City could jump in there ahead of you know what the spot is. I don't think the Knicks want to make both of their picks. Now, I don't know what the trade is, but maybe you trade for one of those New York picks. You go in there, you draft Baylor Shireman. We talk about dribble pass shoot. Of all those dudes I just named, he is the most dribble pass shoot. Not the best defender, but he could be insulated a little bit. But he really, really rebounds the basketball. I think Sam and I got asked the other day who the best rebounding wing was. And the fact that we didn't say him is a travesty now that I think about it. You know, he averaged 9 rebounds a game. Dylan, he didn't average 1 offensive rebound a game. That means he got over 8 defensive rebounds a game. And this dude played with 7-footer Ryan Kalkbrenner on his team. Mm-hmm. And so, like, this dude is attacking defensive rebounds. And as you mentioned, an older player who should be a little bit more ready to go. You know, he's already 23 years old, will be 24 by the start of the season.
Yeah. No, hey, I'm with that. And I'm glad we brought up Sharman, because he's the guy that we haven't talked about. But as you mentioned, you know, he's a guy that is rapidly rising up draft boards because of his performance in the combine. You know, you mentioned Justin Edwards, you know, obviously he had a great combine as well. I'm a Kentucky fan, right? but just because I'm a Kentucky fan doesn't mean like I want the Thunder to draft anybody to play for Kentucky. Edwards is very tough with me, man, because as I've talked with you about this, like, you know, in that stretch, there was like an 8-game stretch at the end of the year where he was shooting like 45% from 3. He was locking dudes down on defense.
Yep.
And he really bought into the role of a 3-and-D guy.
100%.
And I feel like if he can do that in the NBA, it could work. Like, it could absolutely work. He has the archetype. He has the shooting. He has the length, the size, the speed, everything you need to be a good defender. Some of the things that he does, man, literally the last image that I have of Justin Edwards in a Kentucky uniform is him missing rim stuff on that dunk with the left hand against Oakland. And it's just like, man, I don't know. Like, if we took him, you know, we have a saying around here, it's trust the Presti. You know, he's built up enough goodwill in the fan base, you know, especially in the draft, that, you know, we just have to, like, at least, you know, see it play out. But man, I will be cautiously optimistic. Let's say that.
Yeah, as Edwards is one of those guys. Again, he's in this tier where it does go to the end of the first round. But Justin Edwards is a player where I'm feeling really good if I get him at 31, 32, you know, somewhere in the second round, as opposed to the first round, probably. And I think these other wings probably are better than him. But you hit the nail on the head in terms of he went through this stretch where it's like, and think about how hard this was, Dylan. This was a top 5 recruit in the country. And he came into Kentucky, and all of a sudden Reed and Rob are coming off the bench and, you know, are getting all the pub over him. Not to mention Antonio Reeve. Like, gosh dang, that Kentucky team was stacked. Goodness gracious. They had some dudes. Sorry.
Like to talk about it.
I know, my bad. But, like, I kind of appreciate the fact he was willing to accept this different role of, okay, I'm just going to shoot threes, attack a closeout here and there, and then I'm going to go guard on the other end. And that's what kind of, I think that speaks to who a kid is a little bit in terms of being able to do that. That's not easy to do. Steph Castle, that's another reason why I like Steph Castle, mm-hmm. is because he came into college as a primary initiator, as a big-time recruit, and then took this kind of tertiary role and found a way to excel in it. Obviously, Edwards didn't do it as much, but Edwards is intriguing. But I mean, just to be completely transparent here, Jacoby Walter, Keyshawn George, Shireman, Furphy. I didn't even mention Bobby Klempman. I actually think Klempman could be an interesting player for the Thunder as well. I have all of those guys over him in this tier also.
I got you. Yeah, Stephen Gillespie of No Ceilings actually put me on Bobby Klempman last year. And he was a guy that I was like locked in with for a little bit. But yeah, he'd be interesting for sure late. Firthy, you know, he's a guy that he could do kind of everything but shoot. So I'm kind of worried about that. Jacoby Walter, interesting. I would be hypocritical to say that, you know, he likes to have the ball in his hands too much, and then, you know, say that, you know, we need a guy and go get a bucket. So I guess I could come around to that. And then Keyshawn George is a guy that I really like as you know, just like a big shooter, can play a little defense as well, but that's kind of all he gives you. So, I mean, you know, it's the late first round in a quote unquote weak draft class. So, you know, beggars can't be choosers at that front. But
and to be clear, Jacoby Walter's a guy that most people would be picking the Thunder to take at 12, not trading back into the first round. I am lower on Jacoby Walter than the consensus. It's probably the player, him and Kevin McCullough are probably the guys I'm the lowest on compared to consensus when you like would compare my board to others. Jacoby Walter's a lottery pick for a lot of people.
Yeah. No, I got you, man. Two more questions and we're going to get into like rapid fire superlatives and start bench cut. Okay. So first question. So we had Rucker and Metcalf on separately in our first two podcasts. Rucker is really high on Pacome Dottier.
Yeah.
Tyler Metcalf is really high on AJ Johnson. You know, two guys that are kind of like out of the consensus, like, you know, first round lottery range that they're really high on. I wanted to ask, do you have a guy that like that?
Yeah, so I almost brought up Dottier because these two, those and AJ both, they're actually back-to-back on my board, and they're in this tier that we are just talking about. Let me look through here. I think Devin Carter, I think everybody else is probably there on Devin Carter. I will say Jalen Tyson is a guy. Tyson's in my top 20. He is the top of this tier that we've been talking about. And then the guy right behind him on my board is Bub Carrington. So those are two guys I feel like I'm pretty high on. Tyson, definitely compared to the consensus. I think a lot of other people are there with Bub or at least close to there. But I would say those are two guys that I've been pretty high on all season long.
Okay. Yeah, Tyson's been a guy that we've talked about a couple episodes. He's my light because, you know, he's a guy that can go get you a bucket.
Yeah.
And also, you know, pretty good rebounder as well. So definitely fits the mold in that.
Strong physical player, like had to play on the ball and do everything for California this last year. And so I do think there's some passing and the turnovers numbers may scare people, but I think he had to do everything for that team. So I think if you put him in a secondary role, second side creator role, hopefully you just get more of the positive flashes, not as many of the negatives. And the defense is hopefully better because the offensive usage and energy isn't required as much.
Yeah, for sure. Because I mean, he's got the body type to, you know, be a stonewall defender. So
yes,
talk to me a little bit about Bub Carrington. I haven't tapped into him as much.
So Bub is a freshman at Pittsburgh this last season. He opened the college basketball season with a triple double, either in the first or second game of his career, and kind of just jumped on people's radars. And then it kind of was up and down from there. So Bub is an on-ball guy who can operate a pick and roll, make passes. He is skinny right now. His superpower or elite skill offensively, I would say, is probably his off-the-bounce shooting. I think that's what he probably does best right now. And then there was real defensive questions for him all year long. And then late in the year, there was more and more film where he locked in. And so when Bub is locked in on the defensive end, he can really guard. He has good length. I think he's a better shooter than the three-point percentage says, but he took over 6 a game, some of them really difficult, and was almost an 80% free throw shooter. So my real quick, like archetype potential role, true primary creator, plus size, may not have elite playmaking, but you can see the foundational skills to be a good passer, creators for others. room for growth with the decision making, but his assist to turnover, Dylan, 4.1 assists to less than 2 turnovers as a freshman at Pittsburgh. Okay. So yeah, the catch and shoot fluidity has some room to grow. He definitely looks more comfortable off the bounce. And then I talked about the defense. So that's just and for Thunder fans, I think he has potential to make an impact on the defensive boards. Like, I think he could come in there. He averaged 5 rebounds a game. And yeah, almost 5 of those were on the defensive end. So talk about a guard who got almost 5 defensive rebounds per game.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah, I love what's his actual first name?
Carlton Bub Carrington. Yep.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I'm gonna tap into him for a little bit more. He's definitely a name that, you know, you've been hearing a lot more.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
In this coming week, so that's cool, man. All right, well, we are gonna jump into rapid fire superlative okay. Start bench cut. Right after a word from our sponsors.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwood1, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwood1 now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwood1.
And we are back from word from our sponsors. We got Bryce Hyman here, Game Theory Podcast, a million other things. We're trying to rip through this now. Superlatives, Bryce. We're going okay. to we're going to graduation here. So, best athlete in the draft class. Who you got?
Ron Holland.
Ron Holland. I like it. All right. Best shooter in the draft class.
Reed Shepard with Jared McCain a close second.
Okay.
I want to go back to the Holland answer.
Okay.
I know people can pull combine numbers and, like, you know, and other guys are going to have one, you know, they're going to say, oh, so-and-so jumped it. I will say that was my answer based just off watching film.
Functional athleticism
of what he does on the court. And specifically with the guys in the top 10, like Ryan Dunn probably has an argument here as well, especially with what he does defensively. Like, that dude can cover a lot of ground. I just wanted to give that a little caveat, because I think people could have quickly pulled combine numbers and been like, what are you talking? You know, this dude jumped this, and you know what? Dalton Connect also sneaky athletic as well.
Sneaky
so.
Athletic. Gotta love it. Also, Reed Shepard apparently was sneaky athletic. So
yeah, there you go.
Best passer in the draft class.
Ooh, good. Nikola Topić.
Also,
shout out Juan Nunez. Not a player I'm super high on, but a dude who I think can really operate a ball screen. Passing bigs, Oso Iguodaro. Really good passer. Okay. For a big man. Yeah.
Yeah. Right now, Topic has the sweep on passers.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that carries out on.
Do I get to hear that? Do I get to hear their answers? Do you have them there handy?
Oh, yeah, sure. Ryan Dunn, they both said for athlete.
Okay.
Rucker said Shepherd, and Metcalf actually said Antonio Reeves.
Okay. Sure.
So, and then passer, yeah, we got Topic.
Okay.
All three of you.
Cool.
All right. Best finisher in the draft class.
Ooh, interesting. You know who has the guy who I have in my notes is like, this has insane touch is actually Cody Williams.
Okay.
Like, is a guy that I put there. Now, the attempts aren't a crazy amount, and I'm not sure how much he gets there, but he does have really, really good touch. Man, this is a good question. I'm just trying to skim my...
Try to make it hard, man.
Yeah. I don't know that I have a great answer here. What did those guys say?
So Rucker said Dillingham, and Metcalf said McCain.
Interesting. Okay. I'll stay with Cody Williams. I think he has great touch.
Okay. I like it. Yeah, we haven't talked much about Cody Williams, but you know, we've covered the whole Cody situation extensively throughout the year. Deepest bag.
So Rob has an argument here. Bub has an argument here. Who else just gets buckets? Dottie A can score the basketball. That's kind of his thing. Who else has a bag? I mean, David Jones can score the basketball. I'm not sure he does much else. Yeah, I'll go Rob, I guess. I mean, at the end of the day, Rob's where he's at in this draft because of what he does offensively. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a clean sweep right now for Rob.
Yeah.
I actually, our guest last year, I actually, whenever we brought up deepest bag in the draft, I was like, that'll be Rob Dillingham next year.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I mean, it needs to be Rob, because if it's not, then like,
you know, why are you going top five, bro?
Yeah, yeah. Why? Because you weigh 160 pounds and the defense is a concern. So you better be able to get buckets.
Yep. I see him doing like a Lou Williams type career. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's see here. So this is my co-host made this, Matt Tierney. He's not on here today, but he asked what the largest bag in the draft class is. So most money made in NBA career.
Ooh, interesting question. Who's going to make the most money in their NBA career?
And we've got Klingon and Castle as our choices right now.
You know, I'll just go with the guy I have number one on my board. If I don't believe in him as my number one player, why would, so I'll say Alex Sarr. I think Alex Sarr is going to develop the necessary offensive game. And we talked about this archetype earlier. If he hits that archetype, he's going to make a ton of money. Now, is it maybe it's not smart to bet on a big, right? Having that long of a career, but there's a reason Alex Sarr has been number one on my board all year long. So I'll just stick to that. I feel comfortable with that.
I'm with it, man. All right. Best perimeter defender in the draft class.
So at the top, it's Steph Castle.
Yeah, that's a clean sweep right now.
Yeah. Devin Carter's good, but I think I would still take Steph when it's just defense. It depends on how you want to characterize Ryan Dunn. But yeah, I'll stay with Steph Castle. That's fine.
Okay. Best interior defender.
Klingon.
Yep, that was so Rucker actually said Sarr, and Metcalf said Klingon as well.
Yeah.
Highest IQ.
Topic off the top. Again, this is like, if Topic is in the top five, it's because he passes and processes the game better than everybody else. So, yeah.
That is fair. All right, so I have this in here. And
who did they say?
They have Tyler Kolek for Rucker.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
Steph Castle for Metcalf.
Interesting.
Okay. So actually, I have another category in here called highest feel, and both of them said, what is the differentiating factor between feel and IQ? And what I said was IQ is kind of like more processing, and feel is kind of like, you know, I guess, understanding where to be on the court and whatnot.
So like, I think that's where Castle has, like, I would, Castle's feel is more than maybe like the manipulation of a D, like IQ, I'm thinking like manipulating ball screens and stuff like that. So that'd be Topic and Kolek. And like I mentioned earlier, Juan Nunez, where feel, like, I think Steph Castle, offensive rebounding, cutting, he does those things really well. Listen, I think Bobby Klempman is one of the best off-ball cutters in the draft as well. So, like, when you just talk about that, now his feel on the other end of the court does not translate. You know, hey, actually, you know who has good feel is Tristan Da Silva. That he, yeah. I think he's a sneaky, interesting answer for that context. So,
I like it. I like it. All right, biggest dog in the draft,
Devin Carter.
Okay, no hesitation. Thunder fans,
if he's going to be a top 10 player, it has to be, can they bark?
That was earlier.
Okay, so I will say, I talked to a player, you know, we talked at times all about like these interviews they go through, and some of the questions these kid gets asked is crazy. But one of the funniest ones, they ask him to sing the school fight song. And it's like, could you imagine like going into this and I don't know about you. I can't sing the school fight song for any school I've ever been a part of. I don't think I could say the first line of the fight song of any school I've ever been a part of. Can you?
I can't lie. I know Kentucky.
I was going to say, you can definitely sing Kentucky's.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is a wild question though.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's others that are just as ridiculous. So.
Well, I think one question was like, how many ping pong balls could you fit inside of a school bus or something?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. All right. So we got biggest dog is Devin Carter for sure. Okay. So highest.
Hold on. Okay. Let me give you another one. Jamal Shedd.
Yeah. Metcalf also mentioned him as like a dark horse kind of guy.
Yeah. There's real offensive concerns there, but yeah, he gets after it.
I like it. Highest floor in the draft.
Highest floor. I think Klingon has a decent floor. I actually think Dalton Connect has a decent floor. Devin Carter continues. I'm going to go Klingon, I think.
Okay.
What those guys have?
So Rucker had Castle and Metcalf had Da Silva.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I think Rucker was just doubling down on his belief in Steph Castle.
No, it's definitely trending that way, which I get. Like, I know people love Steph Castle. I'm trying to figure out, like, I guess I say Klingon because at the end of the day, even if he's just 7'2" and is really, really good defensively and offensive rebounds and play finishes, like, that's a 25-a-minute night. Like, to me, if Steph Castle never shoots, I'm not sure he stays on the floor. So,
yeah. That's fair. All right. Last superlative, high ceiling in the draft.
I've continued to say Ron Holland. And that's why I have Ron Holland fairly high on my board to a lot of people. I think there's a world, and I'm not saying it's a great percentage, where Ron Holland is this like prototypical like two-way wing who gets buckets on one end and then plays with insane energy and gives you value on the defensive end as well. Now, does he ever actually shoot it? Is his feel a concern? Like, I'm giving these Ignite guys a little bit of a pass because the program was such a disaster and there was no point guard there. So I understand there's a chance that Holland ends up Hamidou Diallo. I get it. But I think, yeah. Oh, listen, I love Hami. I love Hami. I thought he figured it out his last year with Detroit, kind of what role he could do to stay in the league. And he ended up not. But I think Holland has real upside. And he may not hit it, but and I also want to say, like, I feel like Sarr doesn't get enough credit. Again, if Alex Sarr's offensive skill set comes around the way it could, like, he's the, you know, I said Klingon was the best interior defender. Sarr's right there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the reason I have Sarr above Klingon then is because of what I think Sarr could be on offense. That's an insane upside in its own right also.
Yeah, and Rucker actually had Sarr for his highest ceiling, and Metcalf had Steph Castle.
Okay, Yeah, I will say Sam and I fight about he asked me one time who would have the higher ceiling between Holland and Castle if the jump shot was there. Mm-hmm. And he said Steph. Like, I think Sam would probably answer Steph Castle. Like, I don't mean to put words in his mouth, but he's a huge believer in Castle. And if the jump shot's there, I think he would believe that also. I think Holland could be a real, real two-way wing, which this league really values.
Yeah. How do you feel about him at 12 for the Thunder?
Who's that?
Ron Holland.
Home run.
Yeah.
If he's still there at 12, even like you can talk about some fit things, whatever. If I'm Oklahoma City, I'm swinging. Like I'm not talking trade. I'm not messing around. Like I would take, especially with, like we said, all of the other things they have in play for them. If you can take a cut at that and hit, I would absolutely do that. Ron Holland is number three on my board. So if he's there, if he's there at 12, absolutely, I'm taking a swing. And I will readily admit, Dylan, mm-hmm. I have yet to do a mock where I got Ron Holland super high in the mock. He is one of those dudes where certain teams don't make a ton of sense and you got to find the right fit and some of those things. I was just talking to somebody like, could he have a Cam Whitmore fall? Like not all the way to 20. There were some other mm-hmm. things with Cam Whitmore, but is it one of these guys we're going to talk about as a top five talent, but maybe one team or two teams take somebody else and then other teams just kind of pass like, no, we'll stick with our guy. We'll stick with our guy. And he ends up going to the end of the lottery. I would not be surprised.
Okay. Yeah. He's a name that's very polarizing in Thunder Agreed. Circles. I'd be excited because, you know, if Presti drafts him, it means he sees something and he believes in that skill set and being able to extrapolate that. So, and, you know, I don't think we've said it on this podcast, which is kind of shocking because it's kind of just like a go-to for guys that don't have a reliable shot. We have Chip Penguin.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. And maybe that's what we're talking about. Like, with him, you get him with somebody like that who definitely develops the jumper. And again, mm-hmm. I think his athleticism on the game film, and like I don't really pay attention to combine numbers a lot.
Yeah,
his athleticism on the court during games is what stood out to me. And so that's what like I've said for a while. I think I have in my like of the guys in the top 10 in the lottery, he is the one that shows the most twitch and explosiveness to me.
All right, man. Well, that is all I have for the superlatives. You got time to do a couple star bench cut or we need to hard out?
No, we can do that.
Okay, cool. Real quick, man, star bench cut. This is obviously a conversation very prevalent in basketball circles, so yeah. We're going to bring it to the draft. Zach Edey, Yves Messi, and Khloé Ware.
Star Edey, bench Messi, cut Ware.
Okay. Dalton Connect. Tristan Da Silva, Zachary Risacher.
Oh.
That's the sound we're looking for in this segment.
Start Risacher, bench Connect, cut Da Silva.
All right. Cody Williams, Kashawn George, Pacome Dadier. I always just like hesitate when I see his name.
Start Cody. Bench Dottier, cut Keyshawn George. I don't like this one.
I'm sorry. All right.
The funny thing is, I'm not a huge Cody Williams guy, but I still have him significantly higher than both of those guys.
Okay.
I changed my answer. I will bench Keyshawn George and cut Dottier.
Okay. The last second flip. I like it. All right. This one is from our co-host here, and he once again, who's not with us, he's a North Carolina fan. So,
okay,
Harrison Ingram, Caleb Love, Bronny James.
Start Harrison Ingram, bench Bronny James, cut Caleb Love. Yeah. Oh, he's gonna like that though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I played into it. Gosh, dang it! I should have.
Yeah. I think that was the answer for everybody so far. He doesn't like Bronny James for some reason, so he was hoping that Bronny got cut over Caleb Love, but he was
even over Caleb Love. Okay,
yeah.
I mean, listen, like I think Bronny has a chance to be an actual NBA player. Mm-hmm. He gets talked about way more than he should, and we all know why. And it is what it is, and whatever. I think it's going to take some time. I think he does get drafted in the second round, whether it's the Lakers or somebody else. But there is a path to him being a real NBA player. Not that there isn't for Caleb Love, but I just feel like if it hasn't happened with Caleb so far, it kind of looking like it's not going to. So
yeah, and he's returning to Arizona, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. And like straight transparent, I really like Harrison Ingram. Ingram is 43 on my board. Like I have him as a strong second round pick. So
yeah. I'll never tell Tierney this to his face, but he's a guy I wouldn't mind the Thunder buying back into for the second round.
Absolutely. Oh, I like it.
All right. We got Steph Castle, Reed Shepard, Rob Dillingham.
That's not nice. Start Steph, bench Reed, cut Rob.
Yeah, I will say these last three Rucker actually came up with because just I was just trying to add more to it, and I didn't know much about the draft class. So
I'm notoriously low on Rob Dillingham compared to the consensus, and with complete, like if the Spurs took him at four, I would completely get it, because I think that is an ideal landing spot for him, mm-hmm. where he can be a dude offensively and Wimby can protect him on the defensive end. So
yeah, I think the worst thing for Rob, and I've seen it in a couple mocks, is him ending up in Charlotte.
Sure, I agree. I do not think that would, yeah, I do not think that's a good fit. I know some people love it. I think Rucker or Metcalf actually won mine, but I don't like him in Houston either. I've seen that happened as well. I also don't like that one, but
yeah, I don't like anybody in Houston, but that's just me. let's go. Bob Carrington, Isaiah Collier, Jerry McCain.
Oh no. Start McCain, bench Collier, cut Bub, and I do not feel good about that one.
I apologize for that feeling. All right, here's one more for you. Ron Holland, Matas Buzelis, Tijane Salloon.
Oh, I'm going to get in trouble for this one. Start Ron. No, bench Matas, cut Salloon. It's closer than it would be for most people, though.
Yeah, I've found you either love Matas or you're just like kind of out on him.
Here's my thing. I love the idea of Matas.
Yeah.
Like I love, because I evaluated him as a wing for far too long. He's a forward. And I've even had people suggest to me that maybe he ends up being a big. I think that's harder to do than what people think because he hasn't played it before. But as like a four man, I think his ability to put it on the deck and pass really, and I think he's a good off-ball team defender. I've had too many people question his ability to shoot and whether he's going to be able to or not. Mm-hmm. And if he can't shoot, I'm just like at least Saloon's going to play insanely hard, be physical, cut, like all of those things. That Saloon Buzelis conversation is a little closer than what it is for, is a little closer for me than what it is for most people, I would guess. I'm a little lower on Buzelis.
Yeah, and I can see it because, you know, Matas is more of like a theoretical player. Like, you know, if this comes together, like, look out. Saloon's a guy that has some theoreticals, but he has translatable, like, NBA skills. Like,
it's raw, but you can kind of see the archetype and how he's going to – how it's going to translate and how he's going to get things done.
Yeah, for sure. So, all right, man. Hey, you survived the gauntlet. We're done. You don't got to make any more difficult decisions. Want to go ahead and thank you for your time, man. Yep. It's always a blast to get to talk shop with you. Good to have you on the draft cycle this year. So that's going to be fun, you know, in the coming seasons. But Bryce, want to go ahead and give you the floor, let people know where they can find you, anything you might be working on.
Yeah, no, that's what I always try to emphasize. Like, this is my first year I've really done this. Like, I've scouted guys usually with Piston specific stuff. This is the first year I've gone full-fledged big board and scouted every one of these players and all that. So I know I'm about to learn a lot of lessons, which will be good. Hopefully I'll be better next year. But thank you for having me on again and talking. Follow me at Motor City Hoops on Twitter. It is some Piston stuff, but drop in general NBA, NBA draft content. And then you can find my scouts on The Basketball Bulletin, which is a Substack project I do with Trevor Lane and Keith Smith of the Front Office Show podcast. Nice. And so I have like 35 of them out at this point. And I drop, you know, one a day, one every other day or something like that. So all these guys we talked about, I've essentially have scouting reports out on that you can go and read over at The Basketball Bulletin on Substack. So yeah, follow me on Twitter at Motor City Hoops and you'll be able to find all that stuff. So thanks again, Dylan. I had a blast.
Hey, for sure, man. And that's what's up. You know, T says, thanks, fellas. And he also says, learned a lot of stuff. Guys, awesome. If you want to learn more stuff, tap into Bryce's Substack, the Basketball Bulletin, and learn even more about these players that we will be talking about.
So real quick, I was just telling someone today, like, that's all I want to do. Like, I don't love ranking guys, Dylan. Mm-hmm. I just love giving thoughts. Like, hey, what do you think about Filipowski? Well, here's what I think about Filipowski. And then letting you decide, like, oh, that's a Thundery player. It's not, you know, whatever. I just kind of like breaking down guys' game and then presenting that to people to hopefully, like T said, to learn about and learn from.
Yep, absolutely, man. I'm with it. I love it. I love, like, you know, everybody's different method to, you know, kind of breaking down prospects and like ranking prospects and all this stuff. So it's very interesting to see. Speaking of differing opinions, our next draft episode coming up on Tuesday will be a combination of no ceilings guys, but we are breaking up their units. We've got Corey Tulliba and Stephen Gillespie.
Oh, that's a combo. Those are guys. Listen, no ceilings does an awesome job. Tyler's are amazing. Mm-hmm. Stephen has been a friend of mine for a while. I've got to know Corey. That's going to be a heck of an episode. So you'll learn a lot more from those two than they did from me tonight.
Oh, hey, don't sell yourself short, man. We've learned a lot tonight as well. But yeah, I'm very excited for the episode. It's going to be interesting because usually when we have Corey, we have Albert as well. And Albert's just a wild card, man. He says some of the funniest crap. It kills me. But yeah, I'm very excited for the episode. And, you know, just kind of a preview going into next Friday. We also have Nick Agar-Johnson coming back with Paige Otto as well of No Ceilings. And, you know, just a little tease. We're going to get a lot out of the No Ceilings after that. We're going to have the guys from Nerd Sesh. We're going to have Keandre of Hoop Intellect. We're going to have the guys from Draft Digest. We've got you covered on draft coverage of Topic Thunder. So any opinion that you could hope to have, you will hear it here. But I'm going to let Bryce go. I've got to hit the hay as well. I'm hooping in the morning. So guys, thank you for joining the chat. Go ahead and like the video, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you don't miss out when we go live. Leave a comment in the draft who you're liking for the Thunder to, or in the draft, in the chat, who you're liking for the Thunder to take at 12. And yeah, we will see you guys on Tuesday. Hope everybody has a great night. God bless. Hoop when you can. And as always, Thunder up. You want to say Thunder up, Bryce? All right, that's fair.
I did it last time.
That's fair. I. Thank you for listening to the Topic Thunder podcast. Our podcast is available to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Be sure to leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review, and follow us on Twitter at OKC Topic Thunder. Thunder up!
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.